Welcome into another edition of the Dana and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick. He is Dan. And Dan, for this edition, we are joined by our good friend and yours, Brian Hot Sports Take Snow. Snow, you've been all over pretty much every hot sports take. You and Bomani Jones, ESPN personality, go back and forth now. Are you trying to become a media mogul and just take over all sports media?
Basically, my goal is to be you. I mean, I can't get away from you. You're everywhere. You've got like billboards.
The only Oracle, Latonia.
The Oracle of Latonia.
That's right. Well, this is a special podcast because it is number 55, the Reggie Butler podcast, which means we can finally stop numbering these things. So that's
we'll get to the other 55 and Xavier history a little bit later in the show. But Rick, I am so glad to be joined by you two guys because you are the Woodward and Bernstein of Kippergate. And that's where we're starting today. I guess that makes me deep throat or
prefer you never say that.
Yep.
I was going to say actually Ben Bradley or Nixon, maybe generally. But that's, of course, the story that's making the rounds right now. I would say that 4 or 5 days ago, if we had recorded this podcast, we would have said the next big item of news that was going to come up was Xavier finally grabbing that 2015 priority recruit, Kipper Nichols, out of Cleveland. And I think it looked pretty good up until very recently, but things have gone a different way than expected. So which one of you wants to explain this?
Oh, I guess I'll start.
Yeah, go for it, Snow. You're a little more in tune with this one.
Let's first make something clear. Chris Mack did not tweet because he thought the kid committed. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I think we're going to get a commitment tomorrow.
Yeah, just to be clear, so because some people, I'm sure, may not have followed this whole thing. Chris Mack, when the staff gets a verbal commitment, tends to tweet a certain phrase. I think it's like X marks the spot or something like that. It's something I think he's been doing the last couple years. And he tweeted that a couple nights ago. And of course, everyone assumed correctly that it was referring to Kipper Nichols. And then all of a sudden, the kid goes a different way the next day. So that's the background of that. Sorry, Snow, go on.
Yeah. So again, like Chris didn't just like, hey, I think we're getting a commitment tomorrow. I'm going to tweet this. Now, we'll get into the stupid passive-aggressive Twitter recruiting that all these coaches seem to like to do, but that drives me crazy. I won't even address that. But basically, Kipper told Chris he was coming, and the announcement was set to be made the next day. Well, midday, Rick and I both got word said announcement wasn't coming. Now, which, of course, starts the what the heck happened. As near as I can tell, and I'm not privy to direct conversations between Chris Mack and Kipper Nichols, I have not successfully bugged either one of their phones yet. Kipper basically wanted more time, maybe build a better relationship with Xavier, maybe just take another visit. I'm not exactly sure. Chris Mack and the staff apparently did not think that was a very good idea. And Kipper did not appreciate them not thinking it was a good idea, and they seemingly did not appreciate Kipper's plan. Therefore, the two have seemed to have parted ways, and I'm not sure amicably would be the way to term it.
Rick,
I think that's where things stand.
Can't be much more eloquent than that. I think here's one of the things I would say, like, understand that I know it's confusing when these things start, and it's frustrating that we're posting somewhat cryptic messages that just say it's looking like it's not going to happen. Things look completely off. That's kind of like a WTF type moment for fans. I completely understand that. I wish it wasn't that way. But also understand when we say we got word at noon, that was like a 6-word text at noon that I got. I don't know exactly what Snow received, but I assume it's something similar from his sources. So understand, like, it's not like we are in direct communication and heard exactly what Kipper was saying to the staff and staff said back, and we knew everything that was happening. We were getting it piece by piece. You know, you get that text at noon. For the next 4 hours, you're calling different people and you're on the phone trying to piece it together. Some people are helpful. Others keep you on the phone for half an hour and give you nothing. And that's kind of how those days go. So we're not intentionally withholding information. We're not we're not trying to be jerks about this or flippant when we respond that way, but understand that we can't just run with speculation because then we're not of no use to you. We're just some other guy on the message board posting what they think.
Well, and to be honest, that's always been kind of a tension that's existed. I mean, I remember, Snow, when you were writing the old site, that people would constantly ask you, hey, what's the percentage that Ari Stewart's coming to Xavier? And you would say, I don't do percentages because, you know, the situation today might be completely different in 2 weeks' time. And until the kid commits, you know, there's no real point in trying to make that call.
Yeah, and here's the thing is, like, you know, back on the old site, J.D. Weatherspoon gate, you know, like Xavier had J.D. on an unofficial visit, and basically, like, Sean thought he was going to commit. He didn't. Sean basically, I can't use the terminology that we would use, pressured him into saying, like, today's the day you're committing or you're not coming here. Well, J.D. and his mom basically said, all right, he's not coming. So Xavier said, all right, we're not recruiting you. Benji Burke, Trey Burke's father, who was advising JD through the process, not telling him what to do, but helping him handle the process, calls me and tells me, man, that this is what happened, blah, blah, blah. So what do I write? You know, he's no longer being recruited by Xavier, which was 1,000% accurate. Had it from the kid, had it from the advisor. Well, 8 hours later, JD decided, like, hey, I actually want to go to Xavier. I really don't care. So he calls up Sean to commit. So then it's like, well, was my information wrong that Xavier stopped recruiting him? No, it was right. It was just things changed. Now, that doesn't happen all the time. With Ari Stewart, it was the same thing. And Ari said, like, all right, you're telling me to go play in traffic? I'm going to go play in traffic. I don't really care. And I'm going to make my visits. That's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think, you know, to sort of sum up Kipper Nickel or to wrap Kipper Nickels up, like Snow said, the feeling seems to be mutual at this point. It sounds like neither parties are too interested in each other right now. Could that drastically change in the next 48 hours? I wouldn't entirely rule it out, but for the most part, I think we feel really good about saying Kipper Nickels will not end up at Xavier now. As an overall point, Snow, speaking to the point of the staff deciding, you know, talking about what Sean Miller did, telling a kid it's time to commit or we're going to move on. This is something that happens fairly regularly, or actually really all the time. We don't really hear about it being publicized too often. How often do you feel that this happens? This isn't a rare thing, right?
No, I mean, let's make something clear. Like, you can't do that with Trayvon Blewett. You can't do that with Jahlil Okafor. You can do it with someone else, though. And, you know, sometimes it's on the guise of, like, with Ari Stewart, it was like, well, Kevin Parham's committing the next weekend. We know that. So now we can really pressure you and say, take it or leave it. Sometimes it's, well, if we haven't gotten you by now, we're not going to get you. So we're going to do it. So we're going to chop it off this way. And then the other theory here is, well, if you don't know by now that you want to come here, then there's nothing more we can say. And I don't want you coming anyway. So there's a lot of different reasons why the staff may do it. And this is not just something that's Xavier. It's the country. It's what happens. It's how things get done. I don't know how many people deal with 16 to 18 year olds on a daily basis, but they tend to be indecisive. You have to try to make them decisive. And a lot of times that involves ultimatums.
Well, let me ask you guys this, because it's a point that's been brought up on the message board and I've heard it before. Is there a risk is it just because everyone does it? Is it really good business practice to make these kind of ultimatums? Do you think that generally this strategy works? Because one thing that Xavier has done over the years, it seems like, has kept a pretty good relationship with some guys they finish second with. And sometimes, you know, they double back if circumstances change. If a guy, you know, the Blewett situation being one example. I mean, I think that Jordan Crawford, you could maybe even say a guy that started at Indiana and then came back to Xavier later on. I mean, is there a benefit to sort of handling that process in a way that keeps you on the mind of the kid, or are these ultimatums the best way of doing business?
Well,
I think it depends on the kid. It depends on how the situation ends. It depends on everything.
Well, and they're also not the end of the world. Like, yeah, I mean, you can get over it 2 years later if you're thinking about transferring. It's not like you're stuck on that. I mean, people can get over a few words said, you know, that makes you decide something else when you're 18.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, Ari Stewart tried to transfer to Xavier 2 years ago. They decided not to take it. I mean, it wasn't like, well, they put an ultimatum on me. I'm never going to talk to those guys again. You know, that's just not what happened. Xavier just decided Ari wasn't the right fit for him. So he went to USC. So, I mean, that's just kind of the way things are. I mean, it's business.
Snow, you were pretty high on Nichols as a guy with some room to grow. Do you think this is a big deal for Xavier to lose out on this recruit, or do you think, you know, they'll just sort of take it in stride given the other options they have in 2015 and then, of course, the huge 2016 class they're going to be ramping up for?
Do I think he's not Trayvon Blewett. He's not Jordan Crawford. He's not a player like that. I thought he could be a good player at Xavier. But, you can get good players. And to me, it's never the guy you miss on that kills you. It's the guy you get who can't play. So, I mean, to me, it's something that they can move on from and they'll get through.
Rick, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wasn't as high on Kipper as Snow was. And part of that's just because I think Snow saw him play really well in the offensive end towards the end of the summer during July, a couple times where I didn't get to see him. That being said, like Snow brought up, I think he would have been a good player at Xavier. I think one thing that made a lot of sense about Kipper was his strength was that he could really guard multiple positions. He was pretty good laterally, had good length, and was a decent athlete. He would have fit what the other guys didn't have when you're talking about like Trayvon, who's going to be going between the 3 and 4 like he would have been. So I think he made sense for Xavier. I don't think it was a huge deal to miss out on him. And like Snow said, it's always the player that that can't play that hurts you worse than the guy you didn't get.
Okay, so Rick, we're going to segue into Xavier's new priority recruit. And do you want to do the segue?
I mean, yeah, that's fine. You know, Kaiser Gates is kind of now the name. And
come on, man. I was setting you up to say we're going from Kipper to Kaiser.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I should have read your earlier emails or something. I'm sure it was in there.
Okay, go on.
I screwed up the show meeting. I'm sorry. We spent 2 hours prepping before the show to get that right, and I screwed it up. I'm sorry. But yeah.
I'm embarrassed to be a part of this podcast.
Kaiser Gates, a guy they've had a relationship with Kaiser Gates for a longer time than we've talked about him on the message board. Things were turned up a little bit during July, but I think it was downplayed to a certain extent because they were recruiting Kipper and because Kipper was the priority guy. So I don't think I think there was a reason there wasn't a lot of buzz about Xavier's recruitment of Kaiser Gates, but they have kind of kept him warm, so to speak, while recruiting him. And I think when you look at the two players, they are comparable talents. I think there's not a whole lot of difference in talent level, but they also have different strengths. Kaiser's a better offensive player. I think he has a lot more upside on that end. He can shoot it much better from the outside than Kipper. But Kipper, like we talked about, was really good defensively, and I think Kaiser could still play a lot harder on that end and has some work. So, Snow, I mean, Kaiser plays with a ridiculously good high school team. Kobe Simmons, Malik Beasley, two top guys in the class. So what are your thoughts on Kaiser?
You know, I like him. I don't love him as a player. I think he can make shots. I think when he's interested in rebounding, he's a decent rebounder. He's got some versatility to him. I wish he played harder. Defensively, he's certainly not great, but there's some talent there. It's trying to get that motor running. So that's kind of the biggest issue right now, I would say, with Kaiser. I mean, I think he's the same caliber of player of Kipper. You know, who would I draft first? I would have drafted Kipper first, but that doesn't mean I'd be at all surprised if Kaiser Gates turns out to be the better player in college.
Yeah, and see, I'm on the opposite end. I would have taken Kaiser. And again, part of that is simply because I didn't see Kaiser a whole lot. The longest I saw him was at the Adidas Unrivaled camp in Chicago, and he played pretty well when I watched him there. And I like what he brings offensively, because even when he wasn't shooting well, he was able to do things off the dribble. And I compared him on the message board to Justin Martin, and you guys know I hate comparisons, but I think they compare because they're very similar body types. They both shoot the ball well. They both don't always play the hardest. You kind of got to get their motor running, I think. But Kaiser's ability to handle the ball gives him a lot more upside offensively than I think. And that's what really cost Justin Martin from ever reaching his peak was the fact that he couldn't get where he needed to go on the basketball court on the offensive end, and he never improved that part of his game. And I think Kaiser already having that and having a little bit better feel offensively makes gives him a lot of upside as an offensive player.
Yeah. The other thing I should address with Kaiser, he is Yancey Gates' cousin. They are actually biologically related. I don't think they speak very often, though. So, you know, I don't think people should play up that aspect. Kaiser's father, who he does have a relationship, clearly lives in Dayton, I believe.
Yes.
I think he's from Cincinnati, actually. Not Kaiser, but his father.
Right.
And so there's ties to the area for sure.
Yeah, he said when I talked to him at that camp, he said that he's been through the area. He's somewhat familiar with it. And obviously, he's been to Dayton a lot, but he's never visited either UC or Xavier.
Interesting. Well, I mean, I don't blame him for, you know, it can be tough to track Yancey down. I don't know how you get a phone call into Yerevan, Armenia, or wherever he's playing these days. So.
The Tbilisi Sports Palace.
The Tbilisi Sports Palace. That's right. All right.
By the way, Kaiser will be visiting this weekend on an official, and then he'll be taking an official to Missouri on the weekend of November 1st. So,
wow.
Snow, any other schools involved that you know of here?
No. Not specifically. I mean, UC is not involved. I think Georgia's still involved to an extent.
Auburn a little bit maybe, but they got Daniel Parafoy, so I don't know
how that works. Yeah, I don't know if I don't think Auburn really has room for him. The only thing is Kaiser is extremely close with Kobe Simmons, who, by the way, Kobe's dad is also from Cincinnati. Happens to be Alan Payne, former Xavier target. Their dads are best friends. Alan refers to DeMond, who's Kobe's father, as Uncle D. So, you know, some schools, and if Xavier does get Kaiser, this does not make them a favorite for Kobe Simmons. Trust me. But some schools may be trying to hang in there like, hey, if we take Kaiser, maybe we got something with Kobe, too. So just, you know, it can if a school has an extra scholarship, they might say, hey, this is a good idea.
Kobe Simmons is like Samaje on steroids.
He's sick.
He's really good.
All right, guys. So we're going to move into a new segment, and we're going to come back to it.
Segments. I'm a big
new segment.
Guy.
Yeah, we're going to come back to it a few times in the next few podcasts. We're going to start looking at the 2016 recruiting class. And Snow, as you mentioned, I think on the message board, this is a big class for Xavier. That, you know, I think you said the numbers could be as high as between four and six recruits for this class, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. Let's say theoretically they bring in one in this class. That means that they would have one. They would be at 12 for next year. Then I think two, three guys leaving theoretically. I mean, you're looking at a big class no matter what. And Xavier knows that a lot of their focus has been on 2016, even within this 2015 recruiting cycle. I mean, Mike Pegues has been all over Anthony Cowan for a long time. Travis Steele's been about Xavier Simpson for a long time. Derek Funderburk, obviously, they went hard after Matthew Moyer. I mean, they've been, you know, Joey Brunk from Indianapolis. They've had a lot to do with this 2016 class early on. And, you know, I think if you were to ask them right now, do you think you're going to have a really good class? They'd tell you yes. Now, they probably couldn't tell you who it's going to be. But I think they feel a lot more positive about the 2016 class than they ever did about 2015. Now, part of that's their fault, and part of that's the circumstances of bringing in six guys the year before and having a small class in 2015.
Yeah, and let me say just before, I mean, part of, you know, everyone always freaked out the last several years when scholarships weren't filled, when they had like two scholarships open because guys weren't ineligible or whatever happened. But honestly, the problem with filling all your scholarships is there's good players on scholarship who expect to be playing and aren't. And so within the next year or two, it wouldn't surprise me at all if you see a guy or two leave simply because they're not getting the minutes they expect to get.
Yeah, and you can't play 13.
Right. If I was a coach, I would never fill 13 scholarships. I would always shoot for 11, maybe 12. And that being said, this 2016 class, you guys talked about how big of a class it is. And that's why I kind of wanted to do this segment is there's already, you know, I'd say three or four guys almost at each position that I think the staff really, really likes. I mean, loves as much as, you know, Raymond Spalding or Kipper Nichols in 2015. There's several guys at each position right now in the 2016 class that they feel that same way about. So I thought it was a good time to maybe try to get people familiar with the 2016 class.
Well, let's talk about the point guards first. This is going to be an area, you know, X has got D. Davis will graduate, obviously, after this season. They're going to have in the system, you know, Larry Austin, Edmund Sumner is more of a combo guard. But, you know, there's nobody that really stands out as the next floor general unless you're real high on Larry Austin's ceiling. So, Rick and Snow, let's talk a little bit about some of the point guards that X is looking at. And I think one place that we might want to start is to talk about the Rick Carter's efforts in Oregon, because this has been kind of a situation. That's an area that Xavier really hasn't recruited before. And Peyton Pritchard seems to be a guy that they're interested in out there, as well as some other recruits that we'll talk about later on.
Yeah, well, they're all over Peyton Pritchard, and Rick Carter's been on that one for a while. And for, you know, both he and TJ Leaf, which we'll talk about when we go to the forwards in another podcast, it was kind of like, is this real for a while? And at this point, it is. I mean, they are legitimately in the mix. When I talked to Peyton Pritchard at the Adidas Unrivaled camp in Chicago, he mentioned that he really likes the Big East and the Big Ten. Why? I really don't know. I mean, one of the other schools that is in there with him is Villanova. I will say he is really good friends with Brian Grant's son. So there is a family tie there. He's known about Xavier since he was a little kid because of that connection. There's some familiarity. Now, that doesn't mean Xavier's going to land him because of that connection by any means.
And let's also make it clear, that doesn't mean Brian Grant's telling him to go to Xavier.
No, that's my point. I mean, this is not something that means like, oh, Xavier has a huge advantage because of that. I'm simply pointing out that the fact that he's considering Xavier makes a little more sense because despite being a kid from Oregon, he's known about Xavier kind of his whole life growing up since, you know, being a little kid and being friends with Brian Grant's son. So, Snow, what are your thoughts? As a player, I love Peyton Pritchard's game. I mean, great ball skills, an excellent handle, great feel, great passer, good shooter. Snow, what do you think about him?
See, we got different evaluations on him. I actually think he's more of a small two guard than a point guard. I'm not sure I've ever seen him pass the ball.
Are you serious?
Yeah, whenever I see him, he shoots it 28 times a game. But I think he's good. I'm just not sure he's a point guard, but I think he's really good. So there's that.
Yeah, I'd take him either way. I've just maybe I haven't seen enough of him to see that side of him. Obviously, I've seen him shoot a lot of jump shots, but I've loved his feel when as a passer when I've seen him. So
I actually haven't seen him pass, so I don't know how his feels.
So, Snow, you mentioned Anthony Cowan out of Bowie, Maryland, who Mike Pegues has been recruiting. What can you tell us about him?
You know, he's a kid I absolutely love. He's a tough kid. He defends his butt off. He's quick. He's a great passer. Like, he just makes everybody around him better. And then he's a good enough jump shooter where he can keep you honest. He's an average to good athlete. Someone Xavier's been on for a while. You know, he visited last June as part of a camp, team camp, something like that. So he's been on campus. That's when Xavier offered him. He's really, you know, Maryland loves him. Georgetown loves him. But, you know, Anthony's always said, you know, him and Pegues have a good relationship. I know, you know, Xavier went out to see him. Pegues went out to see him on day one. And then Mac followed, I think, last week. So obviously they're making him a priority. What I would think you might see them do is you're allowed to take an official visit if you're in the 2016 class starting on January 1. It would not shock me if they try to get Anthony Cowan in for an official visit during the season. And that way you get him on campus, you take your swing that way. And, you know, at worst, you've got a kid on campus who's a really good player.
The one thing that's interesting about Anthony Cowan, when you were talking about having different evaluations, I haven't seen him as much. I've seen him in two different settings, and I've seen him play four games total, two each time. And he shot the ball actually really well when I watched him play. Now, I know that's not really his MO, but I do think that's not really a big concern for me as far as upside goes. As he becomes a college, I think he'll be a decent shooter from the outside at worst case, because he doesn't look to have like a really bad fundamentals or an ugly shot, so to speak. What did you think of him as a defender? I had questions about that, but again, I haven't seen him a ton.
See, I like him as a defender.
He's a little thin though, right? Like, he needs to get stronger. Do you think so?
Yeah, but I mean, Xavier pays a strength coach $100,000. If he doesn't get stronger, someone's getting fired.
Right.
So, you know, but he really gets underneath ball handlers well. He moves his feet well. I've got no concerns with him as a defender.
All right. Daniel with us?
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Are you trying to intentionally screw up the podcast?
Did you just take a nap, Dan?
No, I went to... Hold
get a
on.
Beer. All right, go ahead. Get a beer.
No, I went to... I had to grab my phone because I've got the outline on it. Okay. All right. So the next... So, Rick, you've got a couple other names here. Maybe each of you guys can just weigh in briefly. Xavier Simpson from Lima and Temple Gibbs, who's from West Orange, New Jersey.
All right. First of all, I just got to address something. I'm not Catholic, but... Can Catholics make a decision on Xavier or Xavier? Like, to me, this doesn't seem tough. Just pick one. I don't care which one it is.
Well, like, it's not like the Catholics own the rights to the word Xavier or Xavier.
It's a saint. But it's a saint.
It didn't originate with Catholics.
I'm just saying.
Dan, you know a lot more about the Bible. Help us.
Well, it's from St. Francis Xavier, the founder, one of the preeminent Jesuits, but I don't know that there is. It seems like on the East Coast they all say Xavier, and then in the Midwest you hear it with the Z sound. I always kind of like the way it's pronounced in Brazil is Xavier, which I think is a little bit more Xavier. Elegant.
Xavier. Yeah,
I'm just saying, someone needs to make a choice. It's really confusing.
Well, in any event, I believe this guy, the guy from Lima, is Xavier.
He is.
Yes, he is Xavier. And Xavier has done a great job of recruiting Xavier. Michigan State, if they offer, will be a team that'll be really tough to beat. I don't see Ohio State offering. I think Northwestern recently offered, and that'll appeal. Xavier's a really good student, but Xavier's done a great job to this point. He was the first person Mack and Steele saw in the open period. They've made him a priority from day one. He, in theory, is a better version of D. Davis. Now, I know Message Board Nation hates D. Davis for reasons I don't comprehend, but theoretically, he's a better version of D. He's a little bit quicker. He's a little bit better shooter at the same stage, and he's got excellent feel and is a great floor general.
Yeah, right now I think his only offers other than Xavier are Cleveland State, Toledo, and Northwestern. Do you know of any others, Brian?
No, Northwestern to me is the latest one he got. So yeah. I think sounds right.
Yeah, and looking at that, I think, you know, you mentioned that Xavier's done a really good job of recruiting. I think if you look at the guys we're talking about, this is the guy they're farthest along with. This is the guy that if they were to get an early commitment, I think they probably feel good enough with Xavier Simpson that they might take one from him. And he'd be the most likely, in my opinion, out of these guys we're talking about. You know, the one thing I do like about this kid is he just has he likes the big moment. I've seen him take a couple buzzer beater shots already and made some big plays in big and end of games type situations, which I've liked that part about his game a lot when I've been watching him. And I, you know, the other thing that I know can only come from a certain assistant coach on this staff is I heard his father spoke to his father for an interview, and his dad told me that he's pretty excited about the idea of being the only player in the nation to wear his full name on his jersey with the front and the back. So I think we know who that came from.
That's a straight Mario line. I think you're wrong. That's the most Mario line in history.
I don't think so.
I guarantee you.
Who is the kid from there was a kid from Providence named Jeff Xavier a few years ago who could have had Xavier on both sides of his jersey if he'd come to X. But and then Temple Gibbs, the last guy you had mentioned, Rick, in your rundown. Any thoughts on him? That's not a name I'm actually familiar with. So, yeah.
Are you familiar with Sterling Gibbs?
I am, actually.
That's his youngest brother.
I recall him very well.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that has offers
Gibbs.
From
– He's the best Gibbs.
Yeah, exactly. He's the best Gibbs. He has offers from Oklahoma, Miami, Seton Hall, South Florida, Temple, USC, Georgia Tech, Auburn, Towson, and I only expect – along with Xavier, and I only expect that to increase a lot. He played really well at Peach Jam in front of a lot of coaches. I'm kind of surprised he doesn't have more offers than that already. Snow, where do you think Xavier stands realistically in this one?
Outside looking in probably be my guess. Assuming his brother's not having a terrible time at Seton Hall right now, if he's going to play in the Big East, I would assume he'd go to Seton Hall.
All right. Well, the next thing we wanted to talk about is one of those things that I consider to be it's off-season banter, I guess, Rick. It's this ESPN future power rankings that came out last week.
Right.
Now, I've made clear my opinion of things like this talked about the coach rankings that came out a couple months ago. I think they're good for printing out and like lining your birdcage with to collect poop. But people like talking about them. So explain this one, if you would.
Well, I guess the idea of the rankings were to rank the 25 teams most likely to have success over the next three seasons. Xavier came in at number 17, in between UCLA at 16 and Villanova at 18. The only other Big East team other than Xavier and Villanova was Georgetown at 24. The top five teams there were Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisville, and Florida in that order. I don't know. Did anything, you know, they had a couple comments, Eamon Brennan, John Gassaway, and then my friend and your friend, Jeff Goodman, each wrote a little thing about a little capsule, if you will, about Xavier here. Do you guys have any thoughts on what they said?
17 seemed kind of high to me. Seemed a bit aggressive just based on them never having a bad season. But, you know, I mean, they do have a lot of talent in the pipeline. I mean, if you're looking at future and, you know, there's something to be said about the facilities and the commitment and all that. So, you know, there's a lot there. 17 just seems high because when was the last time they were ranked 17 in the country? You know, just from a logical perspective. But, you know, it's better than being 71.
I mean, the thing is, though, that this is even more contingent on things that we don't know whether or not they're going to happen than even preseason rankings. I mean, you think about, you know, 24 hours after the Xavier Baylor game in the Sweet 16 a couple years ago, you would have looked at Xavier coming back that following season led by a backcourt of Samaje Christen, Mark Lyons and Dez Wells, which would have been a pretty
small
good
forward
team.
Number five. Small
yeah.
Forward, no, you're not allowed to refer to him by name.
Yeah. That's right. I'm sorry. SF Terps. SF Terps, Samaje and SG Arizona.
No, we're actually allowed to refer to Cheeks by name, but that's never happened.
Okay. But so maybe you would have thrown Chris Thomas into that mix too at the time. So it's like who, you know, maybe what SF the joke I was going to make is
Penal League.
I was going to make is inappropriate, frankly. My issue is, I mean, it's very difficult to project. At least we know when you look at the team this year, at least it looks pretty good on paper, at least. And you don't really anticipate any major changes between now and the beginning of the season. So we kind of know what they're going to look like. And I mean, is this year's Xavier team likely to crack the top 20 at any point? Maybe, but if they do, it's probably because they just demolish their non-conference schedule and end up
non-conference schedule. It is too. I don't know how they'll get through that one alive.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think it's a little bit ambitious, but that's not to say it couldn't happen. But I think, you know, what does the future mean? I mean, there are guys that are going to, if you're talking about 3 years from now, I mean, Kentucky's going to turn over their roster at least twice by then. So it's tough to really so I think making those kind of predictions is a little bit silly, but
sure.
That's my
well, opinion. Here's what I thought was a little bit interesting.
No one cares what you think, Broering.
Even Brennan and John Gassaway.
Stick to Northern Kentucky high school football.
I'm trying to. Even Brennan and John Gassaway both took shots at Chris Mack here a little bit with their comments. Even Brennan said why they are here. Xavier didn't rate as highly as many of the teams in terms of pure coaching. Chris Mack still remains in the shadows of Sean Miller and Thad Matta, his two elite XU predecessors, but the Musketeers landed this high because they have almost always been a stable entity. Then John Gassaway says, is Xavier really here at number 17 solely on the strength of what the program is yet to do? Or have my fellow voters and I looked past the future in future power rankings and given rather too much credit to what the likes of Miller and Mata were able to do with past Musketeer teams? Any thoughts on that? Fair?
Thad Mata left Xavier 12 years ago. So I mean, kind of citing that still is I mean, if that's going into your calculus when you're deciding where Xavier is as a program, a coach that left 12 years ago, I mean, then your opinion isn't really very useful to me. But I understand what they're saying. I think that, you know, Chris Mack, I think he does have a little bit to prove to a certain extent, because, you know, the teams that he had that were outstanding were inherited for the most part. And I think now he's finally got a team in place that's all his guys. You know, the turmoil of previous years is behind them, some of the off the court stuff. So I think he's dealt with a lot of things that were external over the last few seasons that maybe right. hindered the ability of the program to move forward. So, I mean, I do think it's going to be an interesting couple of years, that these next couple of seasons, assuming Chris is here the next two or three seasons, to see how Xavier does.
They should be good. I'll say that. They should be good.
Yeah, Jeff Goodman agrees, so that's good, surprisingly.
That's all
that matters. Makes me feel bad if I agree with Goodman.
Yeah, I figured you'd feel good about that.
And so. Just so people know, me and Goodman are legitimately good friends. We just like to mess with each other on Twitter.
That's going to crush a lot of people's spirits because they think you guys just have an ongoing feud.
How do you and Mike DeCourcy feel about each other?
Me and DeCourcy have dinner like every time I'm in Cincinnati.
I know. I was just throwing
We're just
out.
Both really stubborn.
And you argue about the dumbest things. But anyway, well, that's neither wrong. Here nor there. What about he's that other wrong. Number 55?
Yes. Yes. This is good news for fans of comedy, Deadspin readers, and those who have some sort of investment interest in a potential nuclear war between the United States and the People's Republic of China.
And I am thrilled that you're here to pronounce this.
Jordan Crawford is playing with. Oh, geez. Xinjiang Guangxi Flying Tigers of the Chinese Basketball Association.
That's right.
Who's going to prove you wrong?
He's joining the legend Andre Blatch with that team. And Two Holloway tweets, that boy going to get 75 a night in China.
Is he wrong? First of all, let's go there. Nope. Is Two Holloway wrong, or is Jordan Crawford actually going to average 75 a night in the CBA?
Well, probably take 90 shots a game. So, I mean, it's conceivable.
The fish is going to get buckets.
Well, here's the thing.
As Jordan Crawford will tell you, I ain't a PG, I ain't an SG, I'm a BG, I'm a bucket getter. That's a direct quote.
That kind of reminds me of that Nick Young, that unbelievable Nick Young quote that came out a couple of weeks ago about how
arm strictly for buckets.
He doesn't have any tattoos on his right arm because it's strictly for buckets. I laughed at that for like a full hour.
All right. So what is the shot distribution going to look like on the Flying Tigers this year? Jordan Crawford shoots 76% of the time. Andre Blatch gets 30% of the shots. Other Chinese guys?
I might not need to show up.
Not I good. Thanks for showing up. Go get me a Powerade.
I hereby
Steve's got this.
I hereby challenge Ken Pomeroy or perhaps our guy Doug Tift to produce some usage rates for the Flying Tigers this year, because
we'll get Doug Tift on that.
Something may be broken by the
Here's another thing we have to address. When Jordan Crawford and Andre Blatch have been on the court in the NBA, they have always been productive.
Yeah, that's right. Like, that's the
thing.
But
they're not in the NBA anymore. That should tell you something. And now they're on the same team. The NBA doesn't cut productive players.
There's going to be a lot of bewildered Chinese basketball players on that roster, I feel like.
Okay, being dead serious, though, let's set an over-under for shots. Where do you set it at, Dan?
Jordan Crawford? Do they play 48 minutes? I honestly don't know. Or do they play FIBA rules?
I don't know.
Okay, assuming 40 minutes, he'll get 30 up a game.
I was going to go 28.5 as the over-under.
I'd take the over, but actually, Snow, you might be right, because there's a pretty good chance that he's going to get benched like every 2 weeks. So I don't. I mean,
it looks like they play 40 minutes a game, because guys average like 34 minutes a game, like the top players. So
He won't like that. He won't care for that.
So what'd you say, Dan? I missed that.
About 30 field goal attempts per 40 minutes, I would say, if I'm going to do it as a rate stat, because I have to, because like I said, there's a decent chance that the coach is going to shoot him or have him deported after 2 weeks.
I'm
going
to say he comes out and gets a triple double the first night. They love him. They're talking about building a statue like he's Stephon Marbury. And then, by game 10 or games 2 through 10, he hasn't racked up another assist since that triple double night where he had 11, and he has shot an average of 36 times per game in those second 9 games after that first triple double.
It's going to be fantastic.
That boy going to get 75 a night in China.
But I'm so glad that Tim Burke, acquaintance of mine at Deadspin, he monitors these bizarre basketball leagues from around the world. So I'm sure we'll see some Jordan Crawford highlights on Deadspin over the next year or two. Gentlemen, I believe it's the first time, Snow, that the three of us have been on the podcast since we started our football prediction league.
It is.
And as I analyze the standings here, it appears that you and I are atop the table at 7-2, ahead of BJ from Dana's and the Oracle of Latonia, who are at 6-3. And of course, DJ Hodge, formerly of Learfield, now of Clear Channel, pulling up the rear at 4-5. So, Snow, your thoughts thus far on the Dana and Victory Football Prediction League, which for some reason I have used the acronym DVFFL, which doesn't really stand for anything. And I have no idea where that came from.
Fantasy Football League, I guess.
So, Snow, your thoughts, if any.
I'm surprised I haven't gone 9-0 personally, because I'm just that good. But I'm not surprised to be in first.
You're tied for first, though. Like, let's not.
It's tied for first and first. It's not third. It's not second. It's still first.
It's tied for first.
Well, fellas, since we're on here live, since we have live action, the three games. Now, I probably have. I guess I'm trying to pick these games in an objective way. I'm not trying to pick games that I have a good feeling about, because frankly, I wouldn't. I try to pick.
What are you calling your people in Vegas?
Yeah.
Got some inside info.
I don't have any people. So we've got Carolina +3 at Baltimore. I think all of us took Baltimore in this game, showing no love at all for Cam Newton. Was it just the Pittsburgh blowout last week that scared you guys off, or do you think Baltimore's legitimately good?
I think Baltimore's really good.
And Baltimore at home, I just never bet against that ever.
Chances of some sort of bizarre incident involving Steve Smith during this game.
Is there a number higher than 100%?
I'd lock him down as on every fantasy team, but only worry about first half statistics, because he'll be kicked out before halftime.
It's kind of interesting how influential he's been for them after he had like 74 drops in the week one game against the Bengals. But
I can't believe how much they're targeting him.
Yeah.
Like they have made Torrey Smith completely non-existent.
Is he still getting open that much, though? Like, I don't understand how why he wasn't doing this a year ago.
When you have an elite quarterback,
that's a good
point. You trust him to make those calls. Here's two teams that are kind of enigmatic. New Orleans -3 at Dallas. I think you guys both took.
I took New Orleans, but this one was a tough one.
I took New Orleans.
I took Dallas in this game.
My only concern is New Orleans is so bad on the road, relatively speaking. Oh. They lost to friggin' Cleveland.
Yeah. That's true.
But I just think the Cowboys secondary is so atrocious. Even on the road, Drew Brees will throw for 952 yards or something.
I think that New Orleans' defense is such a tire fire that I have to go with the Cowboys, even though
their defense is a tire fire.
Well, they were and the Cowboys were in meltdown mode 4 minutes into the season, but yet have kind of righted the ship. So I'm going with Dallas at home in that game. Last game Monday night, I believe, or is it Sunday night? I think it might be Sunday night. New England -3 at Kansas City. I think all three of us took the Patriots in this game. Just no belief in an Andy Reid offense against you guys don't
BJ
think
BJ took
you
KC.
Oh, BJ did take that? Kansas City. That's right. So you guys don't really like Andy Reid in a matchup of wits with Bill Belichick. That seems like a weird choice.
Historically bad matchup for Andy Reid.
Hoodie
my thinking is the Patriots offensive line is so bad, but I don't know if Kansas City's defense is able to take advantage of it. And then Andy Reid will ignore Jamal Charles by halftime. Thank you to my fantasy team. Damn you, Andy Reid.
Isn't he injured?
He's coming back. Injured. Relax. I follow these things.
And New England just completely sleepwalked through their week three game against the Raiders. I did find it was kind of funny that every single point in that game was scored by Rob Gronkowski, Sebastian Janikowski, or Steven Gostkowski. It was like a 1930s NFL game where Polish guys scored all the points. But yeah, I mean, the Patriots really haven't been that impressive yet, which leads one to look a little bit forward to next Sunday night's game, which I think is a real benchmark game for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, I agree, Dan. And here's why. The Bengals historically under Marvin Lewis have been god awful in two scenarios, coming off of bye weeks and primetime games. This is both.
Yeah.
Usually they should lose this by 84. So have they taken the next step to where they can win in a circumstance where even when they've been good the last 4 years, they have not won? I'll be very interested to see that.
I have to say, though, I mean, I'm happy to admit that at least thus far this season, in this young season, that, you know, I kind of snarkily said at the beginning that the Bengals would only be as good as Andy Dalton, the unspoken thing being that Andy Dalton was going to be bad. I think he's been really impressive the first 3 weeks, and a lot of it has been he hasn't been touched, which is a nice change of pace. But he just seems to be a little bit more mature in the decision making. He's not forcing the ball quite as much. I mean, I think the only turnover that he's had in the three games was that screen pass to Gio Bernard at the end of the first half of the Tennessee game, which if Gio catches the ball, I mean, he might still be running. So
he left two touchdowns on the field against the Falcons on a corner routes to Sanzenbacher, which honestly, the first one, you just can't miss that throw. I mean, there was no one within 10 yards of him and he missed him.
Yeah.
So he left some points on the field.
And
for
in
sure.
The Baltimore game too, he wasn't very efficient on third down, but I thought the key was in both of those games. And I was at the Atlanta game that he didn't make the colossal screw up that led to a pick six or something like that, that completely changed the game. I mean, in the problems that the Bengals had in the Baltimore game were really about just kind of bad luck and getting that field goal blocked, and they couldn't really finish drives. And, you know, when you don't turn the ball over, it makes it more difficult for the other team to overcome those multi-score deficits. It doesn't seem to happen a lot in the NFL without turnovers that a team will overhaul a 10, 15, 20 point deficit.
Yeah. And it's crazy that they killed Tennessee the way they did, because it was not a crisp game.
No,
Jake Locker is really bad, so that helped. But like, they missed a ton of tackles in that game defensively. I didn't think the defense was very. I mean, it kind of surprised me. That I kind of took a step back after the game and was like, this team might be really good because they didn't play that well and they dominated that game and they were in control the whole way.
I mean, they were helped by the fact that Tennessee was just completely hapless. They missed two.
Yeah, Jake Locker.
They missed two easy field goals. Locker throws the interception down deep. There was the and then there was that idiotic play where he takes a sack and loses 15 yards and knocks him out of field goal range. I mean, that Tennessee team played really, really poorly. And you're right. The Bengals were not that great. It was a much more, you know, you look up, it's 33-0 and you're like, this doesn't feel like a 33-0 game, really, but it's still an impressive performance. And I mean, the road gets more difficult for them starting in New England next week. But I think the early bye might actually help because they're.
Oh, so banged up. Don't say that. I'm about to annihilate you.
So we'll see.
My only hot sports take, I don't have much analysis because I've been thinking about Highlands Govcath all week. My only hot sports take would be Seattle Seahawks number one, Bengals number two, NFL.
Mm. Yeah, I think you'd have to do it that way. I think the Bengals have played better than the Seahawks, but at the end of the day, the Seahawks still have to have the number one spot.
But I'm okay with that. Like, I mean, yeah, I'd take that if I'm the Bengals.
Absolutely. But, you know, I'm not. Yeah, and it is true. I mean, it's difficult to come up with who are the
second
who in the AFC
take.
Who in the AFC is better really so far.
Second hot sports take: the best comparison in the NFL to Andy Dalton is Peyton Manning right now.
The way it really is right now,
they are the Andy same Dalton quarterback right now. Hurt, yeah, Andy Dalton has more physical tools. Throwing,
if he went to the NFL Combine right now, he wouldn't get drafted.
Yeah. They are running the same stuff. They are the same quarterback right now. If you watch them play, it's like they have the same issues, the same weaknesses. Defenses take away the same thing from them, and I mean they're both fairly successful.
That's I can't. That take is hot. I mean, it's I'm scorched a little bit here. I have no answer to it. I don't know where the fire extinguisher is.
Singed your eyebrows a little bit, didn't it, Dan?
I'm all flushed at the moment.
Looking like that Andy was Reid.
Great take. Stupendous take. What's going on with Dalton's hair, by the way?
Oh, still he's bad. Pretty, isn't he? Good.
I don't know. You know what?
Like a pound of gel up in his locker.
If that's making him play better, I mean, I'm all for it. He can grow out the carrot top style.
It's like he's just decided he's not even a ginger. Like he just ignores it. He plays up his hair. He makes it look good. He's like, screw it. I'm just a brunette.
What if Andy Dalton turned up after the bye week and had just gone like full Just for Men and showed up with jet black hair, eyebrows, and like maybe like a really awful goatee?
No play.
Wouldn't that mean he is officially? Wouldn't that mean since he's on the Bengals, he's turnt up? T-U-R-N-T.
Speaking of which, how about my colleague Richard Skinner and his obsession with that phrase of turnt or turn up?
I don't think Richard's ever heard that phrase.
No, he's very familiar with it. Trust me, I talked about it with him on a whole ride down to Lexington this spring, and he's been a huge fan. And then as soon as Jeremy Hill took to hashtagging everything always turnt, Skinner, that's like his guy. Like him and Jeremy Hill have a lot in common, apparently.
When you had this conversation with Skinner, was he wearing some sort of track suit?
No. Huh. He was in some Dockers.
Dockers and Rick, polo. Rick, what is your current record in predicting Northern Kentucky high school football on the Enquirer website?
Ooh, it's good. I think it's 45-5.
I think you should stop.
Why?
because there is nowhere to go but down.
Oh, I'm with you on that.
I mean, when you're hitting at a 900 rate.
Yeah, I mean, if there was a sports book.
Here's the thing. The separation's so bad. No one wants to hear about this. Let's just stop. Let's just stop while we're behind.
Well, it is interesting because like Moeller went down to Louisville St. X, who's supposed to be a pretty good team, and just hammered them last week. So, I mean, it does seem like. Well, I don't know.
Hey, little love to the GCL, which I normally don't do on this podcast. Hell of a win by Elder.
I'm
blaming that on why Kipper Nichols didn't want to come. He was at the game.
He was with Stainbrook.
Yeah. They probably decided like, screw this. These Cincinnati kids are too tough.
Mm. Was it at the pit? Was it at the pit or was it a neutral site?
Oh, it was at the pit. It was rocking. Even on Channel 64's broadcast.
Mm. Yep. So the Oracle of Latonia, 45-5. I mean, that is really impressive. You need to play that up. You know what? I'm granting you the trademark to that phrase. You need a Twitter feed.
Can I get
you
a t-shirt?
You need a picture of yourself wearing some stupid hat. Get with Darren Rovell and start protecting your brand, Rick.
My brand's huge. It ain't Ralph, though.
Before this thing mercifully comes to an end.
What's the name of your clothing line? We don't know.
Rick's colleague and good friend, new BFF even, according to sources, Paul Dougherty.
Well, let's talk about this, because Dan, I do have to say on the podcast, I should get it out there that I don't think Paul Dougherty actually knows that we were ever beefing sort of on this podcast, or that I hated everything that he wrote. But I think we've buried the hatchet. We ate bacon before the Bengals game. I covered the Bengals game with Paul Diener and Skinny for the Enquirer, and Doc, being a colleague, sat at the table with us and we ate some bacon. It was a little rubbery, but the conversation was good. And here's the thing. Where we really bonded is when I came back down and sat next to him and I looked at his tweet deck on his laptop, and there sitting on his Mac are some tweets from one Brian Snow bitching about whatever he was talking about with Red's trades, which I'm sure Snow will get into in a minute. I said, God, people are freaking morons, aren't they? And he said, oh, tell me about it. And they started telling me about this guy, Brian Snow. And I'm like, oh, you don't have to. I'm well aware of that guy.
Snow, do you want to defend yourself?
That's how it happened, though. I'm being serious.
There's no need to ever defend myself in a debate with someone named Paul Dougherty. Obviously right.
That's a true story, though.
But I've never said I'm not an idiot. But he's talking about making all these trades with the Reds. And then I simply asked him, okay, Paul, if you're saying the Reds, the goal is to win a title, which I think we all agree is the goal, is that going to be easier to do with the best pitching staff, starting staff in the National League, the best closer in the National League, and in his prime Joey Votto, and in his prime Todd Frazier and Devin Mesoraco, and theoretically in his prime Jay Bruce? Or is it going to be easier when Joey Votto is 36 years old, making 20 to 25% of your payroll? He said, well, clearly it would be the first one. Then why are we trying to make trades for the future?
Well, is that what he was advocating? His comments infuriate me. That's what he was advocating. Yeah, hey. Then I think he's wrong.
I think he's a hell of a writer.
Then I think he's wrong, because I think, as I've said on this show before, I think the Reds this offseason do need to reallocate some resources. I think that they've got some, you know, they've got some issues in terms of the way their payroll is structured, and you know, they're not going to be able to keep all those starting pitchers after this season. So, you know, do you consider moving somebody to try and help your offense? I don't know, but I think
if you can get, you know, and they're not, this trade isn't going to happen. So, but if you can trade Johnny Cueto and get, you know, Starlin Castro, or, you know, a middle infielder who's going to help you, you know, right away, a left fielder or something like that, go for it. That's helping your team now and in the future.
Right.
But if you're just trading for prospects and trying to restock the farm system, that's not the goal. Because your window is this year, and that ain't changing. You can't get out of Joey Votto's contract. You were stupid enough to sign that in the first place.
So now you have
to work within the parameters of it.
The other thing that doesn't work about that is that the time for restocking the farm was 2 years ago, because that was the period where there was the giant hole in the farm system that was, you know, produced by the trade for Marshall and the trade for Latos. Now you've actually got some of these guys, your Travieso, Stevenson, you know, even some of the position player prospects like Irvin or the other Winker, who injured himself but will be back next year. Those guys are going to be up in AAA next year. So I don't think it's really as important at this point to restock the upper edges of the minor leagues. The time to do that was a couple years ago. So I agree with you, Snow. I mean, I don't think they need to make a deal to modify, you know, to plan for the future. But I mean, you cited, you know, the Cespedes deal was a weird one, and it really hasn't played out well for Oakland. But I actually think that might be the kind of deal that would make sense for the Reds to move a starting pitcher for a quality position player. I'm not advocating that particular deal, but something like that, where you're a little bit of a challenge trade, where you're moving a proven major league player for another proven major league player that fits your needs a little bit better. That's the kind of trade I'd like to see him do.
If you're going to help, you're like, hey, we got an excess of pitching. We need to help our offense. That makes sense. Now, the way Doc phrased it was, well, Oakland, they went big. They clearly did the right thing. They traded Cespedes and got a pitcher. Well, now you've created the worst offense in baseball. Good work, Billy Bean. In the middle of an absolutely epic collapse. So needless to say, I don't know how that can be the model you want to use. Now, if you say, you know, this is what we need, this is what we're going to get, we can help us that way, perfect. But you can't say, look what Oakland did. They traded Cespedes. Well, that killed them. They lost 13 games in the standings since then, I believe.
Yeah,
That's not a good trade.
I liked the aggressiveness they showed in going out and getting Samardzija that early in the season. But obviously the platoons that they tried to jerry rig to fix the hole that was left when Cespedes was traded. I mean, the Johnny Gomes, Sam Fold, send in the clowns routine did not really play out the way that it could have. And then they took some trades, and then, you know, they lost their closer, which it, hard to say for a Moneyball team, but it absolutely killed them. Still, I mean, their collapse has been pretty atrocious. It's not quite as awe-inspiring as Milwaukee's, but I can't rip them too much, because a team goes for it, they do something stupid, but they don't totally wreck themselves for the next 5 years. I'm kind of okay with that. I would rather fail boldly than kind of just ride out status quo if you don't have a team that's good enough to win the World Series.
But here's my thing. I think if you put Billy Hamilton leading off, let's just say Votto 2, Frazier 3, Bruce 4, Mesoraco 5. That's a pretty good middle of the order right there. If they all come back to career norms, and that's saying Frazier and Mesoraco are going to come close to doing what they did this year. And this is where Doc misses, because he's too lazy. That's what the Reds didn't have 3-4 years ago. They had Votto.
Easy.
And then they had Bruce. And then, you know, you had half a season of Ludwig and, you know, Frazier platooning because Dusty's an idiot. But they never had those four guys in a row who were all threats to leave the ballpark. And then if you have Phillips as your sixth hitter, you know, then you're looking okay. I mean, you really are. Your offense, all of a sudden, it's like, wow, there's not a lot of easy outs here. Whereas right now, we're, you know, Bruce up until 3 days ago was below replacement level as a player. You know, like, that's the problem. You can't have $80 million of replacement level player.
Yeah, he's had just a completely disastrous season. And you just have to, I mean, I hate to say it, but you almost have to hope that it's entirely or mostly attributable to the knee injury that he had at the beginning of the year, because, I mean, he's looked completely clueless for huge sections of the season.
Yeah.
I've got is Covcath 28, Highlands 24, Colonels win one for the first time since November of 2006.
Who wins the Moeller St. X game?
I'd say Moeller.
Okay. I'll take your word
for
it.
Can both teams lose?
You're the Oracle.
Natural disasters, Snow. Natural disasters.
I mean, I don't want anyone to get hurt. I just don't want anyone to win.
All right. Fair enough. Well, I think that does it for this 55th Reggie Butler edition. How about Reggie Butler, the big fella? Edition of the Dane and Victory podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. For Brian Snow and Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.